Happy New Year. It's a new decade, but UTAS returns with the same optimism about Cambridge United. On today's pod, we dissect the disastrous festive period. We contemplate how a team who doesn't get paid can still beat us. We discuss the January ins and outs. We answer all your questions and we work out how we are going to afford a £50 million new stadium. Jordan Warland, welcome.
Good afternoon, Jack Swindlehurst. How are you?
Very well, yes.
Are you sure?
Living in 2020.
How are you coping?
Yeah, I'm
on one leg. You know what I'm talking about. How are you coping without Gary Deegan?
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm doing all right. I miss old Gary, but yeah.
How many tears did you shed?
A lot. I kind of was comforted by the thought that I thought it was like the end of his career.
No, mate. We're all Shelbourne fans
and
now.
And then, yeah, now he's gone off and he's gone to play for Shelbourne. So I feel a little bit like a little bit duped by it all.
So are you going to change your phone screensaver to him in his Shelbourne kit?
No, I'll probably change it to another Cambridge United player who I'm going to give all of my love to, who then will go and break my heart all over again.
Elliot Ward.
Yeah, Elliot Ward, someone like that. I'm going to go for someone like Norville Williams, who's definitely going to be there for the future, hopefully. And of course, welcome Tom Walker. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Sorry, that was a bit of an odd one. But yeah, we are back. We are here. It's been a while, but we're back and we're going to talk about the different sides of Cambridge United that we've seen over the past 5 or 6 weeks. It's been a roller coaster and, pretty typical for Cambridge United, sadly to say. So recent form has been pretty poor. 4 defeats in last 5. Last 7 results have been 2 wins, a draw and 4 losses. It's not been good throughout December, has it?
Well, we could go back even further. Was it 4 wins since the middle of September?
Yeah, it's pretty shocking viewing, just scrolling back through Cambridge United's league form. And there just seems to be, we saw in the middle of October, we saw the 4-0 victory against Exeter at the Abbey, and there were murmurings that maybe Cambridge were going to mount some sort of mad run up until Christmas, and we could be sat here at this point, in and around the playoffs.
It was still petering on even over the Christmas period when we weren't playing particularly great. I remember leaving the Morecambe game, which is possibly one of the most dismal victories I've ever seen, if a victory can be dismal, and we were back to within 6 points of the playoffs, and people were still sort of saying, only a couple of wins away from the playoffs. But like we were saying on the previous pod, the league table can be misleading and points tallies can be misleading. It's about the style of performance and what you're seeing on the pitch. And we are a long, long way from being a playoff team. And I think given everything that's happened in the last week or so around news coming out of the clubs about who's leaving and what the transfer policy will be in the next couple of weeks and potential people coming in or lack of, according to Calderwood, it's pretty much all but confirmed that the club's opinion is we're not going to be mounting a promotion push this season, and we will just plod along until April, May time. I guess if we'd got a result yesterday against Macclesfield, which we really should have done, because this is a team that's not won since October. It's a team that's not been paid. A team doesn't even have a manager. Former Hughes midfielder Daryl McMahon is now at Dagenham and Redbridge. Really should have got a result from that. And if we had, then you could look at our form and go, from the last 7 games, we've won 3, lost 3 and drawn 1. And it fits the wider picture of Cambridge this season, where we seem to win and lose in equal measures. And that's pretty much atypical for a mid-table, lower mid-table type team, which I guess was probably always going to be most people's aspirations at the start of the season. Not Calderwood's. I seem to remember him saying we're going for promotion. But we didn't get that win, so we can't sit here and say, oh, we have got that kind of 50-50-ish sort of ratio. And I think the most annoying and disappointing thing over the festive period is not getting spanked by top of the league Swindon, but it's losing to teams who are near us in the table or below us in the table. Your Mansfields, who've been on poor run of form, I don't think they've won since October till they beat us. Macclesfield, like we said, haven't won since October. Orient came to us, I don't think they hadn't won in a couple of months. So losing, well, not just not picking up points, but losing at home to teams who below us in the table is the biggest disappointment of the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, month or so. Tom, you okay?
Yeah, you summed it up quite well there, I think, Jordan, to be honest.
Should see the hatred in Tom's eyes right now of looking at our recent form.
I've just got it in front of me here. It's depressing, isn't it? It's been so bad for like probably 8 or 10 weeks now. You know, we can go back as far as we want, I guess, but the thing that's fresh in all our minds is sort of Christmas and sort of probably leading back to maybe the Orient game. You know, it just screams out to me that a team that doesn't really have an idea of what they're supposed to be doing. The game at Swindon, I do agree, Jordan, you know, you don't expect much from the league leaders, but that doesn't mean you just write it off. That doesn't mean that you just fold like we did. You know, that was the second consecutive game that we were 3-0 down at half time, and that to me is evidence of a team that isn't being set up correctly and doesn't have the right mentality or the right sort of motivation to go out and sort of compete in games. And when that's the case, you know, against Leighton Orient, that's probably a much bigger problem. And it was set pieces against Orient, and that's the basics of the game. It's really you should be getting right, particularly against teams that aren't as good as you. And it's just been a pretty poor run of results, and I think pretty depressing times.
Just,
really,
just a big Tom Walker up. He did expertly predict a 4-0 defeat to Swindon.
Yeah, he did.
Smash that prediction.
Another quick point, which is related to everything we're saying. 2 points is the Leighton Orient first half of that game was the worst half I've seen at the Abbey, maybe since being back in the Football League. Like, it was that bad. And there was no... It looked like Cambridge United couldn't be arsed. Like, there was no, you know, want from them. They had a couple of times the ball out wide. They tried to get it in, but didn't beat the first man. And secondly, Cambridge United in the league this season have conceded nearly half their goals in the league since the start of December.
Yeah, and I think that point you make there, Jack, about the sort of effort levels, that's the one thing that I think probably up until this point, that's been the one thing that you can't really criticise the team for. But I think you're right against Orient, we just got kind of sluggish. Swindon, it looked like they're just kind of written it off as, you know, well, we're against the league leaders, so what happens, happens. Morecambe, the quality levels in that game were so bad. I mean, I think you touched on it, Jordan.
I think it was worse than Orient. And we got 3 points.
Yeah, we were saying the same thing coming out of the ground. It was a depressing victory in many ways. Just the level of quality, what we showed in the game was so bad. I mean, it was enough to beat a pretty tragic Morecambe side, who in all likelihood are potentially going to be the one team to go down this season. You know, credit to the team, I guess, for getting the job done, but that's all it was. And then you look at games like Mansfield, where it's just just capitulation again. Right, there's maybe a caveat to that, that the game did change on a red card, which I think was fair and justified, but I know there's been a lot of criticism of the decision for that. And then the Macclesfield game, you know, let's not just look at this as, you know, a plucky sort of backs to the wall victory for Macclesfield. By all accounts, we were played off the park. You know, we were the second best team and didn't really deserve anything out of the game. And when, you know, you're talking about a group of players who haven't been paid for so long and they don't have a manager, you know, resigned very shortly before we played them, it's pretty disgraceful, really. And it's worrying because we're now at a point in the season where, generally speaking, teams look to get stronger, and we seem to have written that off. You know, the rest of this season, you know, we've seen confirmation that Ward will be leaving. Obviously, we mentioned Deegan, who wasn't really in the picture anyway. And Richards is maybe a more worrying one, in that Coldwood seems to have wanted him to stay, but the board have said, look, we're so far out of the picture in January that it's not even worth trying, you know, for the rest of the season. And when you consider that a lot of the teams are going to start to get a bit stronger and we're staying the same, then you think it's going to be a pretty dismal end to the season. And the worrying factor is that gates have already been dropping. You know, we've got another 4 or 5 months until the season ends, and you know, we could be back in the mid-2000s before the end of the season, and that's difficult to come back from. And you know, so that's my real concern.
Just a couple of points on what's been said across the pair of you so far. The the goal stat that you threw at us from sort of the ratio of goals being conceded.
Yeah,
that's mental, especially considering how many of them have probably come from set pieces.
Yeah,
our manager is a former international defender. Like, set your team up, train people, and I and that kind of leads on to the next point I was going to make. I didn't go to Macclesfield yesterday, and kudos to the 180 brave souls who did long their way up to Macclesfield to watch that. My heart goes out to you. But Macclesfield seemed like the first performance where a lot of the feelings amongst the fans afterwards seemed to be about the effort and the amount that people were trying. And I think that's a real worry, because then obviously that leads to the motivation that Calderwood and the rest of the backroom staff are able to sort of drill into the players. Because what I would say before that, although the results previous to the Macclesfield game haven't been great, I think one of the things you could perhaps defend was effort. It does seem like most of the team were busting a gut or were trying for vast parts of the games that we played. I think the issue is, one, limitations of the squad. Fair enough. You know, we're in League Two with a sort of mid-sized budget, and we've got hang-ons around people under contract and so forth. But the other thing, the biggest thing, is kind of the setup of the team, and Tom mentioned it, and we've mentioned it in conversation. The big issue seems to be the way that people are being asked to play. And I feel like, as a manager, you either pick your best 11 players and you find a formation that works for them, or you find a formation and you pick the players that can play it. And Calderwood doesn't seem to be doing either of those. It seems to be swapping between one and the other, or going down some other route. And, you know, it's basics. And I know there are injuries, I know there are suspensions, but his match management is incredibly frustrating. And a big part of that is, you know, before we've even kicked off.
Yeah, I mean, with the setup of the team, it's something that we've talked about a lot, whether it's sort of three at the back, four at the back, however many in midfield, etc.
It's other things as well, though. It's playing people out of position.
Well, that's exactly,
and it's not dropping people that aren't performing.
That's kind of exactly what I was going to say, in that, you know, you can talk about formation as much as you like, but let's look at someone like Reggie Lamb, for example. Obviously didn't have a great festive period, you know, pretty stupidly sent off against Orient.
It's a couple of breaks. Been,
yeah, I mean, he's been pretty much roundly blamed for the loss against Mansfield, which is, you know, like we've said, the game changer of that decision, so I suppose you could say it's fair. But this season, Reggie Lamb's played in an attacking midfield position, defensive midfield position,
left wing back,
which is crazy. He's played on the wing. How is he supposed to know what his job is in this team? It's ridiculous. And you know, it's not just Reggie Lamb. You know, you look at other players. Harry Darling's another one. He's playing right back at the moment. That's ridiculous. He's been touted as potentially someone who's going to be sort of a bedrock at centre back. You know, exactly this. And at centre back, and he's playing at right back. And he doesn't look comfortable there. And the game against...
And we conceded goals down that right channel. Like, I'm not going to lay into Harry Darling about mistakes and errors that he's made, but he has cost us goals. You know, we saw it in the Mansfield game. We've seen it in other games over the sort of time where he's been playing right back. Like, it comes to that sort of match management, and it's incredibly frustrating, because you've got Greg Taylor, who is right-footed and has... came to the club many moons ago as a fullback, and is a bit older and a bit wiser, who could probably adapt to sitting out there for sort of 3-4 games while you wait for Leon Davis to get over his nose injury or whatever it was. But it's just bizarre, and that's not the only instance where he's playing players in positions which are a bit questionable. Like Paul Lewis in the holding role doesn't work. Reggie Lamb in the holding role doesn't work. Jack Rolls, who is our most talented and exciting player, and ours in inverted commas because he's borrowed, against Morecambe, he got shoved out onto the left-hand side, like onto the left wing. Mental. And there's countless other examples of playing players in bizarre positions. Second half against Mansfield, Sam Smith went sort of wide right in a 4-2-3-1 formation. I know there are limitations with injuries and, you know, having both your squad right backs out injured at the same time for a second instance in the first half of a season is pretty obscure and random to happen, and obviously unfortunate to have it. But there's got to be better ways around this.
Well, talking of defence and all of the problems with conceding goals, kind of linked to that is recently I went on another show and bigged up how probably the first name on the team sheet was Dimitar Mitov and there was no chance of him being dropped, and lo and behold, he's been dropped. Callum Burton's come in. Mm. What do we think on this, you know, for team morale, for Mitov's morale, for, you know, rejigging a team at this point in the season?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because Mitov didn't strike me as being what you might say is like the reason that we're not doing well. Having said that, you know, he's not been playing brilliantly, let's be honest. I can think of the Orient game where there was the free kick, which admittedly was a very well taken free kick, but didn't seem to really know what to do about it. I think we can look at things like distribution, which have always been questionable. And Callum Burton, you know, there's no point in having someone like that if you're not going to give him a try when things aren't going well. And obviously kept a clean sheet. I think it was in the Morecambe game that he came into the team. Not great against Mansfield, obviously conceding three goals. But again, I think you can look at other, you know, our defending of set pieces in that game was abysmal. Frankly, I think it was the equalising goal. It could have been the winner. We've let Christian Pearce, one of the most notorious centre-backs in the league, win three headers in our box from one set piece. It's ridiculous. And at Macclesfield, the free kick, which was eventually the winner, you should be doing better. It's this kind of daisy cutting free kick from the corner of the box, and pardon me, we can talk about the Wolves not doing its job and this, that and the other, but ultimately it's a pretty slow shot, which he will probably be quite disappointed he's not got across to.
It's a bizarre situation that we find ourselves in at a club where we have two young up and coming goalkeepers, if you were, I guess, I don't know the full stats, but I imagine they're similar ages, and yeah, it's kind of bizarre to have both and not give each of them an opportunity. Having said that, you know, making changes to your goalkeeper partway through the season is a bit sort of risky. I think it'd be interesting to see how we line up in our next game, whether he sticks with Burton, because he's had, what, three games now? Yeah, he's had the one clean sheet, but has he really taken the opportunity and grasped it? I can think of a few examples in the two home games, the Morecambe and the Mansfield game, where his handling has been a bit questionable. I mean, I was really encouraged in the first game that he played, which I think was the Morecambe game, because he did seem to command his area more and come out and, you know, collect crosses into the box and corners and set pieces. And perhaps that was the thinking in bringing him in, because we were struggling with defending set pieces. But since then, he's not done it. The example that Tom pointed out about the Mansfield winner was, yeah, something that I kind of didn't think I would see from him. But I think for both Burton and Mitov, you have also got to, you've got to question how well the team as a whole are protecting them. And it's not just your right back being a centre back playing out of position. It's not just your centre back pairing where there are questions. You know, it seems like Greg Taylor's lost his pace, and Taff's not been as strong a centre back in the last few games as he has been under Calderwood. But it's the rest of the team, and you know, it's a cliche to say it starts up front, but it does seem like over the last 8-10 games, the team, and I don't know if it's his Calderwood setup or if it's an inability within the quality of the squad, but we seem to be incapable of holding onto the ball. Countless times I've seen over the last few weeks Burton or Mitov make a save, collect a ball, whatever, pumping it forward to no one. It's not sticking up there. There's no target man. Richard, Smith, Nibs aren't able to hold it up. There's no pressure on the opposing team once we've lost it up top. Our midfield is far too lightweight and it's coming through. We seem to just constantly be under the cosh, and it seems to be our own our own doing, this inability to sort of hang on to the ball. And I think the frustrating thing, and again, it's like a tactical thing, and maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's not something you can blame Calderwood for, but we seem to be quite successful when we move the ball forward on the deck and we move it quickly. We run with the ball. Can think of a few examples, the Morecambe winner and the first goal against Mansfield, where we've moved the ball quickly, short passes, kept it on the deck. We don't seem to stick to that game plan for the rest of the game, and we just seem to revert to chipping it forward or lobbing it forward from our centre backs or our full backs and losing possession, and that's the start of our downfall, really.
I think it all goes back to something that we've been saying for quite a while now, particularly this season, which is that, and it's even more sort of pertinent now that we're in 2020 and it's, you know, quite deep into the season, which is that Calderwood still doesn't really know what his best team is. He doesn't really know how he wants to play. And I think if you ask most fans what sort of manager is Calderwood, the answer would probably be, I don't really know.
Mm.
Yeah.
And I really hate to say it, but if you look at Sean Derry, for example, you knew exactly what his teams were about, and it wasn't pretty, and I wasn't a big fan of it, and it wasn't overly that successful. But you kind of knew what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And with Calderwood, you don't really know what the setup is. You don't really know what the kind of game plan is, and that's a trend. And we've said many, many times on this show that it's going to start costing us, and it is costing us, because now we're, like I've said before, so many times off, so far off the playoffs, sorry, that we've basically written off the last month of the season as not even been worth giving it a go, and that's on the manager for me. And
this is probably the biggest lesson from the last 10 or 12 games. Others may have said they've noticed it before that, but when Calderwood was announced, I think a lot of people, myself included, thought we were getting this master tactician, someone who knows the game very well, has coached at a top level, has been successful as a manager, but also as an assistant coach. And we might struggle this season and the part of last season, because he was, you know, ultimately playing with other managers, players and squad that put together, and he wouldn't fully get to build a squad of his own until the summer that's coming, although he did have about 9 or 10 incoming players this summer. But I think the thing that we were expecting was someone who, yeah, was this master tactician and would be able to win games by being streetwise and being smarter, and you know, he's quite a big name for a manager in this league. And I think a lot of fans were expecting him to get better results out of the limited squad that he's got, and that's probably the real sort of crushing feeling at the moment, is that that's not the case. And yeah, he doesn't know his best team. He sets up odd formations. He's very slow to make changes in the game, and not just substitutional changes, but just formation changes. And yeah, it's going to be a long second half of the season. Like, it's going to be near impossible to get relegated from this league with everything that's going on, but it's not impossible. And you know, looking at the teams that we've lost to over the last couple of weeks, especially the Christmas period, but even going back into sort of earlier in December and November, you know, losing to the likes of Walsall and won for months on end, it is a point of may now starting to look over our shoulders. But it just seems bizarre. And I think maybe one of the reasons that I'm not in the Calderwood out camp just yet is that every now and then there is a glimmer of a good performance. Like, the Christmas period started fairly well, if you include the Plymouth and Cheltenham games. Like, the Plymouth game, we were very impressive. Admittedly, Plymouth aren't as good a team as perhaps they should be, considering the money that's been spent on them. But the first half against Cheltenham as well, you know, going into those sort of Boxing Day, Guccimas kind of period games, I thought we would perhaps do well because of those performances.
I think that's probably been the one reason that there isn't a more sort of vocal element of our fans who want Calderwood out, which is that when we have played well, we have, generally speaking, been very, very good. And, you know, you think about Exeter, win 4-0, Mansfield away, win 4-0, the Plymouth game was a slightly different type of win, but it was still very, very impressive. And I think on balance, they're pretty irrelevant.
Even the first 20 minutes against Mansfield were decent. Yeah.
And
they're not as good a team as the other ones.
I suppose what it is absolute evidence of a team that are about as mid-table as you can get. We probably need to be a little bit careful with saying that we need to start looking over our shoulders, because if we're going to start writing off our chance of the playoffs, where we're closer to them than we are the relegation zone. So if we're saying that we're definitely not going to get the playoffs, then well, we're definitely not going to get relegated.
Yeah.
And I think both of those things are absolutely out of the question as far as I'm concerned. But my problem is that if you're not going to get in the playoffs, you need to be challenging. And what we're probably going to see is that by the end of the season, we're probably 15th, 16th, 17th. Mm. And that's kind of not really that much better than we were last season. And especially not any better than we were last season, given the amount of investment that's been in the team and the amount of players that Calder's been allowed to bring in, which I'm sure we'll come on to in terms of, you know, business and dealings and things like that. But, you know, for me, we're just a very, very poor outfit.
I think I agree. I think a loss to Morecambe in that festive period would have been really, really difficult for Colin Calderwood to try and think. That win came in the middle of two losses either side and just about papered over the cracks. But yeah, like we say, coming up in the second half of the pod, we're going to look at the current state of affairs at the clubs, including January's ins and outs, as well as the fixtures coming up in January. Right, coming up in this second part, we're going to look at the current state of affairs at the club, so this shouldn't take long. We're going to look at how January's going to look and the ins and outs too. First things, lads, thoughts on the players that have been released, namely Ward, Deegan and Richards?
I said this to you before, Jack, but Ward isn't very good. Deegan's not very good, bit unfortunate with his illness. Richards didn't really prove to be that useful either. I think in the grand scheme of things, pretty sensible decisions. But like I said in the first part, the worrying factor is that it seems like Calder wanted to keep one and he's just been overruled. I'm not really that sad to see the back of any of them, to be honest.
It's sad to see Deegan go in the circumstances, obviously being ill and not being able to come back and play is obviously a shame, but I think it's the right decision. I don't think he would have been kept on into next season, although you could maybe make an argument that a Deegan-like role is needed in the team at the moment. Elliot Ward was an experiment that didn't ultimately work out that well, apart from one beautiful assist and one really good block that prevented a goal, but he seemed to be off the pace a little bit. I can see why Notts County went down if they had a defence that included both him and Dan Jones. Richard is the one that I'm probably most surprised about. I think, although ultimately he's not been used correctly by Calderwood, trying to use him as a target man, that's not his style of play, and I guess that links back to the points that we were saying before about Calderwood's match management and tactical approach. But even though we weren't getting the best out of him or using him in the right way, I thought he would have been kept on, because ultimately we're now down to three strikers again. I know Jabbo is still at the club. It's hard to know when Jabbo will be back. You hear stories saying January, you hear stories saying February, you even hear stories saying March. If it's worst case and it's March, that's a long time to try and get through with just three strikers, two of whom are young and inexperienced. Having said that, if this gap in the squad, now that Richards is gone, means that there's more game time for Harvey Nibbs and Andy Dallas, it's maybe not the end of the world if we can see some development from them. Nibbs has impressed me a bit over the last couple of games. Maybe not the most gifted of players, but is definitely a nuisance and is, you know, uses his pace quite well and chases people down. So there are some encouraging signs, but yeah, I I think, yeah, letting Richards go was probably the big surprise. And I guess ultimately it comes down to the club trying to get on top of their finances and looking at the longevity of our playing budgets. And I guess you look at the three names, Ward, Deegan and Richards, that's probably what, a 10 to 15 grand a month saving on wages, those three?
Yeah, I'd say absolute minimum. Probably looking more towards 20, I would think.
So, yeah, I guess if it means that we can reinvest that budget next season, then great. Obviously, it's disappointing that we're not seeing any... Well, we're being told we won't see any reinvestment on it this January. I find that a little bit far-fetched from Calderwood. I'm sure we will go after a couple of younger players from Prem teams. Not that that's ideal in a situation where perhaps you need some experience, but...
You've got teams around us in the league, you know, your Grimsby's and your Carlisle's, just two examples, prime examples, both...
The two teams you support.
That's absolutely not true. It's two teams that have recently parted ways with managers and got new managers in, mm-hmm. and have, with when not having managers, have still managed to find sign players on loan from Premier League teams, Premier mm-hmm. League and Championship teams. For some reason, you know, Cambridge United... So Calderwood came out with this quote. I'm going to use the group that's here. Of course, if there's anyone we wanted to go after or is sitting on a plate for us, then of course we'd always go and ask and try and generate the money. But there isn't any. An odd one from him when teams around us are still doing the same thing, even when they're, you know, there's no money or, you know, they're struggling without a manager. It just seems a little bit of an odd mentality, right?
I find that an odd quote, maybe for a different reason, in that I think as a manager, you lose your right to complain about a lack of funds when you use them so badly. Mm. I mean, Ward, from day one when he was training with us, I can't think of a single fan, any sort of positive remark about him from any of his sort of recent clubs. He was just an awful signing, someone who never really played well for us. Richards, like, we said it quite a lot, right, that... If his job in the team is to be a target man, you can get cheaper, more functional people in for that job. Like, that's two players who we'd have spent a lot of money on. He gave a new contract to Gary Deegan, right? You have to assume that that's partly his decision. It was partly Calderwood's decision to give an improved deal to George Maris, right? Like, I understand if there's a bit of frustration about the budget, but ultimately, we're not working on a shoestring here. We've had players who are on... decent money, you'd have to assume. Samir Carruthers, for example, you're not signing guys like that. You're not signing guys like Ward, Deegan, Richards. You're not giving Maris a new deal. You're not signing guys like Dan Jones, for example, experienced pros. Their quality, I think, is questionable, but they're experienced guys who you would think command a decent wage. You don't sign them if you work on the sort of shoestring that he's suggesting that we are. Mm-hmm. The money's not there because he spent it. That's why, mm-hmm. you know. And I think he's playing the game a little bit there. You know, you see it with some other managers where they say, oh, look, we're, you know, a couple short, but that's what we'll do. And it puts a bit of pressure on the board because now, you know, we've got fans. You know, Jordan, you just said that's a bit disappointing that we're not able to bring any more experience in. And I'm sure there's other fans who are thinking that. So it puts a bit of pressure on the board to pull their finger out a bit. But like I said previously, what it shows me is that they've pretty much made the decision that let's write this season off and go again next year. Mm. And...
Yeah, I'm all for Paul Barry putting his foot down and basically saying, look, if we finish 17th or 11th, it makes no difference to me. There's no point spending money to try and finish a couple of places higher in that mid-table obscurity. You've proven up to this point that we're not a playoff team with the money I've given you. We're not going to become a playoff team if we spend a whole load more on it. We're not going to chase that dream. We're not going to go down the route that other managers have got away with at the club. Richard Money and Sean Derry were able to get more money out of the board and didn't get any decent return from it. So I'm quite happy that the club are sort of cutting their cloth and sticking to it. But you know, I agree with what Tom says. Like he had the budget. He rolled the dice, took a couple of risks, bringing people in on short-term deals. If we were sat in the playoff spots, we'd be like, right, well, you know, the risk has paid off. Let's keep them on till the end of the season. But the fact is, we're not. So, why, yeah, why fall into that trap that as a club we have fallen into time and time again, not just this decade but the decade before, where we've you know, gone shit or bust trying to sort of get somewhere. Like, I know it's frustrating for fans, it shows a lack of ambition, but you know, I think we need to remember what was going on in the summer. You know, that was the line from the club was, there is limited money here, there's not going to be a repeat of previous years where we just write off loss after loss. We need to be more tighter with our money, more responsible with our money, and we need new investment. And until we get new investment, there is going to be, you know, stagnation to an extent. So yeah,
do you not worry that this has an effect longer than just to the end of the season? Because like, it's kind of a cyclical thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about, you know, pushing on to next season and we'll, you know, get, you know, be fighting for relegation. But do you not think that this kind of mentality and situation we're in now just leads us to next season being like signing a couple of gambles that could work or couldn't, and then, you know, come next January being mid-table, 10 points off the playoffs and however far above relegation, and just being in the same place again?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's what happens when it's accepted. I've long since said that the ambition amongst fans isn't high enough at this club. You know, there's a lot of people who are happy with where we are at the moment. There's a lot of people who think, well, you know, we're not in the conference anymore. Well, this is our sixth season back in the Football League now. I think we're well within our rights to expect us to be pushing on towards the next level now. And I'm sorry, but if you accept the level of football that we're getting, it doesn't put any pressure on the board to start improving things. And, you know, I think I understand that I'm a bit conflicted, actually, because I do agree with the decision to sort of cut things and sort of, you know, maybe ride the rest of the season out and just sort of, you know, go again next year. But similarly, I think that the people who are responsible for that have to be held to account for being in the situation that we're in. And moving forward, we have to use this as something of an opportunity. You know, if we're not going to be bringing in players, then I've got to say, like, guys like Norval Williams, for example, Tom Knowles, who's out on loan, I know it's become a bit of a cliche among Cambridge fans, but they've got to be getting their chance now. Because what's the point? What's the point in getting rid of these guys if you're not going to, and then, you know, sort of almost using this as an experimental period, if you're not going to bring these guys in? If you're saying to me that the rest of this season is dead space, basically, that it's almost irrelevance because we're not going to go up, we're not going to go down, so, you know, who cares? And then we're going to go for it next season. So in summer, we're going to sign experienced player after experienced player and really give it a go. Well, guys like Knowles, guys like Norval Williams, you're not going to play him then. So if you're not going to play him now, you never will. So either you cut your losses even further and get rid of them as well, or just, oh, I don't know. It's all frustrating. It's all frustrating, isn't it?
I think coming back to your question, Jack, about, you know, worrying about whether this will happen again or not, I think all I would have asked for this season is progression of some sort, and as it stands, we are better off at this time of the year compared to last year, points wise and in the sort of sense of feeling safe away from relegation. And I think we all know that the big piece of work is coming in the summer, where a lot of players' contracts will be up. I think ultimately that question about worried about it, will it happen again and again, that for me doesn't sit with Colin Calderwood. That sits in a much bigger picture, and it's the fact that the club needs some serious changes at the very top. Paul Barry's brilliant, love him to bits, he's kept the club that I love afloat for a long time, but without new investment to the club, or maybe a change of owner, a restructuring of the board and investors, this club isn't going to go anywhere. Paul Barry basically said that in the summer. You know, the club needs to be sustainable, and you can push on and you can get promoted on small budgets and be sustainable. And I'm sure this is just one in a few steps that Paul Barry has in mind about the club becoming more of a responsible with its limited setup. But yeah, ultimately, until there is really big changes behind the scenes at the club, it's hard to see us moving into the direction that realistically we should be moving into, and that is a top League 2 team or a League 1 team.
Yeah, I mean, that's an open kettle of fish, if ever there was one. I mean, if there was a magic money pot, or, you know, strengthening with those wages freed up, what positions would you strengthen in January, or should we be strengthening in January looking forward, regardless of aspirations?
Well, if you look at the squad as it is, you need another striker if Richards is leaving. If Ward is leaving, and the assumption is that Louis John isn't going to get a look in, then you need another centre-back. We've needed a winger all season, someone like maybe David Moo, who can get an assist away at Man City, something like that.
That's a good assist as well.
Good, great cross.
Yeah. And that's probably about it, really. Mm. I think the squad has been pretty bloated, really. I think when you look on like the back of the matchday programme, for example, our squad is very, very rarely smaller than the other teams. And, you know, it just goes back to this idea of building it. And but yeah, I think there may be the three areas that you would look to improve.
Yeah, I think Tom's right. I think a presence up front, especially if we're going to continue to play this long ball, we need a more physical person up top that can make the ball stick for a little bit. Right-sided midfielder, maybe some width there would be a good idea. The left-hand side seems to be okay with Duncan Hannant. Defence, yeah, central defender would be decent. You could also maybe make a case for a right-sided fullback. Depends on the injury situation and what the setup will be with the two that we've currently got. But I'd also address the elephant in the room, and that's Mr. Carruthers. You know, we need a ball playing central midfielder, someone who can put their foot on it, pick a pass and move us forward, because I don't see that in O'Neill. Well, I mean, we've got Maris, but I don't think it's the George Maris that was here 2 years ago. It must be some sort of clone who's lesser in the ability sort of what on the front. I think we need some sort of creativity and ball playing midfielder as well.
Yeah, Carruthers was so good for that, or is so good for that, I should say. He's had a tough year, let's be honest. He's been in and out of the squad of injury. He's never really been able to make his mark. And what we've had is when he's played, he's been pretty good. And I think what we've seen is a player who, if it wasn't for injuries, would not be playing at this level.
Well, I've only seen him once this season, and that was the Orient game.
So he's played three times, I think.
I think he's played a few more than that, actually. I think he's played five or six games this season. Yeah. I think of Crewe away, I think of Vale away, I think of Orient at home. There was another one in recent memory, but I can't remember what it is.
But that Orient home game, even though there were so many dogshite moments in that game, particularly defensively, he was head and shoulders above everyone else on the pitch. Like, he was brilliant, and just his composure on the ball, taking his time, the way he moved us forward, the positioning that he was getting himself in, making himself available for passes, you know, he was even getting, you know, quite sort of scrappy and competitive. Like, he was, it's the presence that we seem to be missing. We just don't have that, even though we've got numerous central midfielders.
If you take away everything off-field and injuries, Samir Carruthers is too good for League 2, for sure. What Chris has got in touch and said was this career's Carruthers signing too much of a risk with the injury prospects. You know, he has had previous things off the field. Like, do we think that we've kind of, this has been a ball dropped here?
I think that's something that's really easy to say with hindsight, which is one of our favourite phrases. I think something that we've sort of banged the drum about is that there's been a lack of these sort of signings that are quite clever in like situations which arise, which we haven't maybe made the most of in recent past. Carruthers is one of those where it's a player who, like you say, otherwise would not be available at this level, and we've signed him because, you know, he's very good. And it maybe hasn't worked out in the way that we'd have liked, but there's been plenty of times where, you know, we haven't signed a player and then they've gone elsewhere and then done very well, and then you think, well, why aren't we taking the risk sort of thing? So it's one of those.
Could have been Wes Hoolan, couldn't it?
Well, I was going to say exactly that. Like, obviously, it is a risk signing a player that has an injury record, and fair play to the club. They only gave him a year contract. Mm-hmm. But I think the biggest risk around sort of the recruitment of a influential creative midfielder was putting a lot of our eggs in the Hoolan basket and waiting till what, the last week of pre-season to get a decision from him on what to do. God knows who we could have found or what other targets we may have missed out on. So I think that was probably the biggest risk, you know, sitting and waiting on a big sort of marquee signing to basically string you along for all of your pre-season. So I think that was the biggest risk. Hopefully the club will learn from it. There are instances where we see the club doesn't learn from the recruitment policy. You know, the fact that we now only have three strikers again, very similar to last season. So that's a lesson not learnt. But yeah, it's disappointing that Karobas is out at the moment.
It all seems a little disappointing and deflating at the moment. Maybe a slight glimmer of sunshine through the thick cloud. The introduction of John Shaggy Taylor joining the club as a coach / scout. Could that be a positive for the club? I don't think we really know at this point, do we?
Really interesting one. Mm. Not something I expected to see. Puts a weird pressure on Calderwood, you know, because in the same way, I think it's when Gerrard retired and there were sort of rumours of him joining the coaching staff of Klopp. It's like, if things start to go badly for Klopp, you know what people are going to start saying. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's the risk of that is a bit less because obviously he's been our manager before and it didn't work out so well. But having someone like that involved in the coaching staff, you know, if things continue to go badly, people will ask that question and, you know, why don't we just give him the job?
It's great to have him back as part of the club, back within the family. I know he's had time away from football. I know he's had struggles with his mental health and gambling. And the fact that he's come through that, I think, is a really positive and key sort of influential person to have around the club to sort of inspire others. It's an interesting story, though, isn't it? Because after he got sacked as player manager with us, Calderwood signed him at Northampton, which I didn't realise until last week when he got the coaching job here. Obviously, it's great to add to the scouting network and to the coaching setup. I wonder what the dynamic is in terms of sort of the head coach setup that we have at the club. I know it's not massively popular with some areas of the fan base, and I know a lot of comments that I've read recently point to what is the constant factor over the last few seasons and the last few managers, and that's Mark Bonner. Like, he worked with Dunn, he worked with Money, Derry, and obviously Calderwood. So, you know, what is the dynamic there? Around training the team and coaching the team, is it on Calderwood? Is Bonner still massively influential? Has he brought John Taylor in to maybe give him some more support around how he wants to set up? Be interesting to know what the dynamic is.
It could be very dependent upon results as well, couldn't it? You know, this could go one of, you know, many ways depending how Calderwood's tenure continues. But, you know, I think we can all acknowledge that Calderwood is on, you know, unsteady ground at the moment just because of the nature of the results. But
yeah,
you know,
I would actually disagree with that completely. I don't think he's on unsteady ground. I think
fuck you both.
I think he's very, very comfortable in his job.
Yeah.
I hope he gets sacked next week.
He was very, very recently given a new contract for, I don't know why, for something that my mind has kind of lost.
Well, Orient was sniffing around him, weren't they, apparently? That was the rumour.
Yeah.
That was the same sort of time he signed his contract
Why were they doing that? I disagree. He's on thin ice. He's
on very safe ground.
He's probably pretty comfortable. There's probably not really a lot that he could do wrong that would see him get sacked. I think the only thing that would really push the board to do anything sort of this side of next season is if we were dragged into a battle, if we really were sort of dragged into that relegation picture, which mm-hmm. I think is extremely, extremely unlikely, mm-hmm. because I still think the squad is there, I think the players are there that would carry it through anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, even if we plummeted this season, I still, yeah, like Tom said, still would back him to be here. We don't have the funds to get rid.
Great.
So yeah, I think he's in a fairly
glad we covered
secure
that.
Position.
Moving on swiftly from my embarrassing evaluation of that situation. Just while we've been away, while the pod has been away, we have actually made a small announcement about a design for a new stadium. Is that going to happen ever?
Love it.
Oh, I don't know.
I crunched some numbers earlier. Okay. In my lifetime, so I'm 33. I think I went to my first Cambridge game when I was about 8. So what's that? 20 years of going to United. I have seen 7 different plans for either a new ground or a redeveloped ground. So this is the 8th. Will I see it in my lifetime? It's hard to say. Obviously, the plans look really impressive. Stadium looks lovely. And I think it's obvious that we will eventually have to move off that Newmarket Road patch of land that we have. You know, the plans look lovely, but the fact that it's somewhere between 35 and 50 million to build it, and we can't even afford to bring in a fourth striker, kind of sort of suggests that we are some way off from getting there. The club do seem more upbeat about finding investors into that as a project. Maybe you can tie in, I don't know, other sort of buildings on the land or renting it to us or whatever, so maybe it is more an attractive proposition than just buying the club outright. The one thing with this proposal compared to the other ones that makes me a little bit more optimistic is the fact that Marshalls seem to be involved.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's their land or land next to their land, but they are a very well run and well organised outfit, and they are more likely to get things done than us. And the other thing as well is it sits into their wider plans to, you know, eventually move the airport and all the associated kind of industry pieces that are on the airport site out of Cambridge and basically redevelop and put housing on their airport site. If that all happens over the next 10 to 20 years, that will be a development in the city which I don't think we've ever seen in terms of scale. Like, I think it'll be bigger than Orchard Park or the new building that they did in, or the buildings they did in Trumpington, in terms of building a new kind of wing of the city. And with that, the land they're proposing for the ground will be in a good position just beyond that, in terms of sort of to have kind of a transport hub or to have kind of facilities that would serve all those new houses. So perhaps it, as part of a wider plan, would be more appealing for the council to push through. It's on Greenbelt land, which obviously is a stickling point. But I don't know, I think the parties involved make me a little bit more optimistic than, say, you know, when we were talking about redeveloping the ground ourselves or moving to Trumpington, like we have in recent years.
Anything on that, Tom?
It's a longer walk from the Dobblers, mate.
Yeah,
it's a long, you get on that lovely new metro.
I was going to say the one thing, like the sort of designs of the actual stadium look quite nice, but they posted a sort of aerial shot of where the ground will be located, and it's in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah,
it just looks so depressing, like just surrounded by sort of fields and sort of motorways, and I just think of Colchester when I see that. And
well, that's what I mean, because if they're going to redevelop Cambridge out beyond the sort of airport, there will be stuff that pops up around there.
It will be like Eddington now.
Yeah.
There will be stuff around it, but I guess that stuff has to be there before or as the stadium's being built.
I don't know. I think the like you said, Jordan, a massive caveat to all of this, and we can spend a hell of a lot of our time getting het up about how far away it is from the station or other associated venues, is that it costs several millions of pounds, and that's quite difficult to raise, to be honest. Just a quick question. Would you rather, given what we've said.
Love these questions.
Yeah.
Would you rather we built this ground, this lovely new sort of sustainable infrastructure for the whole city and for the football club to really push us on to the next level? Mm-hmm. Or would you rather take this pot of 35 to 50 million and just buy like Danny Ings or something?
I thought you were going to say like just have the 50 million yourself. Your option is you can have 50 million pounds. Or you give £50 million to the club to build the stadium.
I'd
invest in the ground rather than Danny Ings. No offence to Danny Ings.
I'd want one in each position. Not like
players.
Yeah, no. I'd want one in each, like a goalkeeper, a defender, midfielder, and a striker of like notable, with like a 5-year clause.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my caveat. But yeah, I think I'd go for that. Fuck.
Be really would your pot of 50 million have to include their wages for the 5 years as well?
Sure.
How would you? Well, yeah, I was going to say, how are you going to, you know, no, sustainability?
I'll be honest, Jordan, it might not have come across this way, but I've not put that much thought into it.
Yeah, some of those would you rather questions are harder than that one, but I'm glad you gave us that one. So yeah, that's a one that we can probably talk about on the next probably like 5,000 or 6,000 podcasts before it actually happens. So yeah, keep tuned. We'll have a stadium feature every podcast from now on. And also, we should probably remember that coming up in January, Cambridge United have some games in League Two, which will probably mean very little. But it starts at Exeter next Saturday on the 11th. That's going to be a tough old trip, isn't it?
I'm bored of playing Exeter.
Yeah.
This season was that game four? Yeah.
Yeah, and they're flying high at the moment.
Yeah, we don't seem to do very well when we travel to Exeter as well either.
So that's probably going to lose that.
But the following three are interesting.
Me and Tom were talking before, and we said realistically, with how Cambridge are and how they've been playing, 5 points from those three games mm-hmm. would probably be realistic / a success, tentatively. So yeah. We've got home.
I think success pretty loosely, but yeah. I think 5 points is what you should expect from those three games because, as we say, Exeter is a tough place to go. Mm. For anyone listening who's of the betting persuasion, Bet365 currently have Exeter at 5-6, which is very much lump your entire house, life savings, family on that.
There are other betting apps available.
There's FansBet as well.
Yeah. Cambridge United host Stevenage on the 18th.
I feel like every now and then you look at fixtures and you think, oh, wheels could properly come off if that result doesn't go right. Mm-hmm. If we lose to Stevenage at home, Stevenage is second bottom, I believe.
Yep.
Really bad season they've been having.
They've only scored 15 goals.
They'll beat us 3-0. Yeah, I look at that fixture and I think if we don't get 3 points out of that one, a lot of, there's going to be a lot of noise and a lot of concerns raised.
Yeah, just to...
But I could easily see us not beating Stevenage, mm-hmm. But then beating Salford.
Just to add to that as well, that will be Graham Wesley's Stevenage, revisiting the Abbey, so we'll be able to welcome him back with open arms.
Open arms. Two long trips in January. The second one, a trip to the seaside in the north, in Morecambe. Always a nice trip for the fans. So 100 and...
Morecambe will fancy beating us.
Yeah,
100%. Like the 1-0 win the other week was not convincing, and there were points in that game where Morecambe were more than competitive. So, mm-hmm. yeah, but you know, the fact they're bottom means nothing really.
You know what? I think they'd have really improved as well by the time we go there. They made a few signings recently. Obviously, Derek Adams would have had a chance to get his hands on the squad and
big,
sort of mould them in his
striker signing, I believe.
Yeah, they signed Jordan Slough. So.
He's going to score, isn't he?
Interesting. I think it was his only goal for us actually came away at Morecambe.
Didn't he score against us for Plymouth?
Yeah, he did.
It's written in the stars.
But
he's on track to take Trevor Benjamin's record of clubs, I reckon. He's on like well into double digits.
Does it count if most of them are sort of regional league?
He's had a lot of league clubs, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's played quite a bit.
He has played for a few league clubs, but recently, I think like the last 2 years have all been sort of below sort of step three, which is pretty bad when you think about it. That's a poor level. Like,
yeah, but he's a very poor player.
But yeah, just on that Morecambe game, that strikes me as a very, very tough game, and one that's a very, very big banana skin. And then Salford.
Yeah, if we don't pick up a win from Exeter, Stevenage or Morecambe, then suddenly a win against Salford at home is going to be very, very much needed. Mm. And could definitely not be a win. So it's not looking particularly optimistic, is it, for Cambridge?
we'll see.
February's going to be just as difficult, I think.
I think it is, yeah. Just briefly looking ahead to February, you know, playing the likes of Colchester, Newport, Scunthorpe. It's busy, isn't it? Bradford, Plymouth and Carlisle. You know, a few long trips in there and a few tough teams coming to the Abbey. So it could be certainly a long January and an even longer February. Right, coming up in the third part, we'll take a look at your questions.